Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to our weekly EAN podcast. My name is Barbara Tettenborn. I am the editor-in-chief of eLearning, and besides that, the head of Department of Neurology in St. Gallen in Switzerland. On my side for today's podcast is Professor Yildiz Dikgemenci, who is a member of the eLearning editorial board and a movement disorder specialist herself. Hello, Yildiz. Maybe you introduce yourself shortly.
Thank you, Barbara. I'm very delighted to be with you today as a co-moderator and, of course, with our special guest, Professor Christian Pecorario. So I'm an editorial board member of the EAN campus, as you mentioned, and a movement disorder specialist running the neurology unit of the Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders Center in Istanbul Medipol University, Turkey. Thank you.
This month, our EAN cast has, as you heard already, movement disorders as topic of the month. And in the first episodes, we heard a lot about diagnosis and treatment of Parkinson's disease. And today, we are talking about the different types of tremor. Our guest is Professor Christian Fallop-Pecorario. He is chair of the Department of Neurology at County Clinic Hospital in Brasov, Romania, and full professor of neurology at the Transylvania University in Brasov, Romania. He completed a one-year European Neurological Society Fellowship in Movement Disorders at the University of Barcelona in Spain and has been president and secretary of the European Association of Young Neurologists and Trainees. He currently serves in several roles within the Movement Disorders Society, including being a member of the International Executive Committee and Education Committee. He is the past chair of the Education Committee of the Movement Disorder European Section. I'm very happy that you take the time to join us today. Welcome, Professor Fallop-Pecorario.
Hello to everybody, and thank you very much for your kind invitation and for your kind introduction. Really, thank you, Professor Barbara Tettenborn and Professor Yildiz Dikgemenci, and thank you very much to the EAN staff, Linde, Meyerhofer, and all the staff from EAN for this exciting podcast.
Yeah, so we just go into the topic. Tremor is a very, very common movement disorder. And it's actually the most common movement disorder overall. So could you tell us a little bit about the clinical characteristics of the essential tremor?
Yeah, you are right. It's the most common movement disorders. And the typical clinical presentation of essential tremor is with fine distal bilateral postural and kinetic action tremor. Slightly asymmetric, involving the upper limbs, especially hands and forearms. The voice may be also affected. The tremor may spread to involve the legs, the chin, and trunk. The amplitude of the tremor usually small and constant, but sometimes could be with high amplitude, and usually is inversely related to age, with older patients having a lower frequency. A common feature of essential tremor is kinetic arm tremor, the tremor that occurs during the voluntary movement and may appear during a broad range of daily activities, for instance, writing, pouring, and eating. In approximately one half of essential tremor patients, the kinetic tremor may have an intentional component as well. For instance, during the finger noise, finger maneuver, tremor terminally worsen when approaching the target. Patient may also have postural tremors. When we speak about the duration, another characteristic of essential tremor is at least 3 years duration, as recently defined by the MDS Task Force for Tremor. Essential tremor is usually of gradual onset and tends to worsen slowly over time, causing significant disability for some patients. The tremor, as we know, is exacerbated by condition as stress, exercise, and fatigue. So the patients are coming to us and saying, okay, hey, doc, I am worsening when I'm stressed. Obviously, we all are having periods of stress during the daytime. And the patients are saying that this is something that is exacerbated, tremor, caffeine as well. And certain medication, an improved with relaxation and small doses of alcohol. Obviously, we are not encouraging the alcohol use for tremor reducing or this is partly just the patients are saying this is something that is typical. Alcohol is improving a lot of essential tremor. The test used to evaluate essential tremor involves drawing a spiral. The spiral drawn by the patient is compared with the one drawn by the examiner or person not affected by essential tremor, and we look after higher spiral scores.
Okay, a lot of times I hear the word senile tremor in elderly people. And they, from my point of view, they tend to not even go to a doctor since they believe it's an almost like a normal sign of aging. And does this senile tremor exist in your opinion, or is it an entity itself, or is it an essential tremor?
Good question. Thank you very much. So age-related tremor in an elderly is a well-known feature, but actually has never received adequate attention. Almost all available epidemiological studies are classifying action tremor in the elderly as essential tremor. Indeed, these studies show that the prevalence of essential tremor in the elderly is strongly increased with age. But this tremor is accompanied by, because we are talking about elderly, by subtle sign of aging, both cognitively and physically. Moreover, late manifesting tremor seems to be associated with dementia and earlier mortality. New data from independent sources are now challenging this view and suggest separating aging-related tremor from essential tremor. So actually, the term senile tremor that we are using in worldwide has been used in the past, but now is now possibly too unspecific and is more aging-related tremor, which is once again a distinct part of from essential tremor.
So, Professor Pecorario, speaking of the essential tremor, how can we assess the tremor, essential tremor and other tremors? How can we differentiate it by just phenomenologically and by assessing the tremor?
Thank you for the question. This is a very important topic. There are some particular questions that can lead the physician to the right diagnosis. First, one should begin with simple questions, as with family history, the way that the tremor evolved, or the relatives. So we need to spend time for the anamnesis. A good anamnesis in such patients, like always, is a good point for having a diagnosis and having a complete assessment of this essential tremor. The second, then the age of the onset, and maybe the most important, if there are factors which improve or worsen the tremor. For instance, as I mentioned, the stress often makes the tremor temporarily worse, or if it has a good response to alcohol. Of course, this question should be associated with a careful clinical assessment, and the patient should be asked during the visit when, during an action, the tremor gets worse, moving towards a specific target or at rest. And the spiral is one of the key features for the assessment of such patients.
Are there any additional investigations beyond the clinical examinations needed or helpful for the workup of tremor patients, like imaging or anything?
Very good question, and thank you once again. Usually the patients are looking nowadays for imaging. There are no medical tests actually to diagnose perfectly essential tremor. Diagnosis is often a matter of ruling out other conditions that could be causing your symptoms as a patient. When it comes to a patient, we need to say, okay, this is your issue and we'd like to have a diagnosis for you. To do this, one should consider performing a CT scan or MRI. Metabolic disturbances as well are important causes of tremor, such as hyperthyroidism. So thyroid function tests should be performed in all patients to exclude other causes of tremors. And this is something that we need to take into account all the time, the thyroid function. Other tests to consider in the investigation of tremor should be the liver biochemistry, screening for Wilson disease, blood measurement of heavy metals, and serum protein electrophoresis. We also need to think about nerve conduction studies or electromyography to exclude peripheral neuropathy that can lead to postural tremor.
So speaking of generally in terms of tremor patients, do you think that all people with a tremor complaint, independent of their age, should see a neurologist to get a proper diagnosis? What's your opinion about that?
Well, obviously, we would like to see such patients, and the patients would like to have a proper diagnosis. It's important to get a diagnosis so the patient receives the appropriate treatment. We know that essential tremor can affect the whole range of ages and is affecting quality of life and are affecting the ability to work. And clinical manifestation should be evaluated by a neurologist, even if they are at the beginning. So if I would like to say yes or no, I will say yes. All the essential tremor patients are needed to be seen by a neurologist. First, because they need a proper diagnosis. And second, perhaps there are cultural differences, but many patients are thinking of the Parkinson's disease when they are having the tremor.
So thank you, Professor. This is a very good take-home message for our young listeners especially. And speaking of essential tremor, are there any differences in the treatment of younger or elderly patients? How do you treat essential tremor?
Treatment for the majority of the tremor syndromes is partly symptomatic and is similar regardless of the underlying cause of the tremor. But we need to always to keep in mind that could be a patient of 25 years or could be a patient with 80 years old. There are two medications, propranolol, which is a non-selective beta-adrenergic receptor antagonist, as we know, and primidone, which is an anticonvulsivant. And these two medications remain the two standard treatments for essential tremor. There are other agents like topiramate, clonazepam, gabapentin, and several other beta-adrenergic receptor antagonists, which are proved to be beneficial. Other medicines such as topiramate, alprazolam, and botulinum toxin injection could be useful. And surgical interventions such as thalamic deep brain stimulation and thalamotomy may be appropriate for those with severe tremor when pharmacological treatment is not satisfactory. We need to treat the patients with pharmacological approach afterwards when the patients are not having sufficient control, the surgical intervention in place. By the other hand, physical and occupational therapy may also help to control tremor and teach individuals new ways of performing activities of daily living that may be affected by tremor. Prior to starting any kind of treatment, it is essential to ask the patient if they feel that the tremor is disabling enough for them to want to take the treatment that may have side effects. So in other words, when the patient is having the diagnosis of essential tremor, we are not going directly to the treatment. So we're saying the patient, you have essential tremor, this is the tremor. It is a treatment, sorry. So we need to carefully assess the patient and ask he or she, if is interfering with the daily activities, because it's, for instance, a mild essential tremor and we are giving the treatment. This treatment could be some side effects and this is something worse for the patient. Elderly patients are very sensitive to the side effects. So we have to start with the low dose and slowly increase the dose until the maximum is tolerated. If side effects occur, dose titration should be stopped and then reattempt after 1 or 2 weeks.
Which side effects of these medications do you fear most?
When we refer to propranolol and the need of high doses, the main side effects include postural hypertension, bradycardia, and also transient loss of consciousness. Also, depending on the chosen therapeutic plan, other main side effects of the medication treatment include sedation, dizziness, ataxia, poor memory, speech disturbances, depression, fatigue, and so on.
In some situations in life, like high level of nervousness, many people suffer from a tremor which is often called physiological tremor. Though it is not a disease, it can be rather annoying and in some professions even disabling, like in musicians. So I know a lot of musicians who come to our outpatient clinic and ask what to do about their tremor. And if we just tell them, oh, it's a physiological kind of tremor, they're not very satisfied because they want help for their profession. What can be the causes of such an increased physiological tremor and how do you treat that?
Excellent questions. Even healthy people can have a physiological tremor. But under some circumstances, this kind of tremor becomes exaggerated and therefore visible. Common causes include certain medications, such as steroids, stimulants like caffeine, afterwards alcohol, nicotine, or drug withdrawal. Also anxiety or fear, muscle fatigue, which can happen after a challenging workout, fever, or medical conditions such as hyperthyroidism, as I mentioned. Physiological tremors usually go away when the underlying cause is treated or eliminated. If the physiological tremor is caused by a medication, it may not be possible to eliminate the medication, but it may be possible to switch the medication or to lower the dose.
Okay, I'd like to ask you a question to, maybe beneficial with our daily living practice, daily clinical practice in assessing the tremor. You know, as many hyperkinetic movement disorders phenomenologically can be misdiagnosed as tremor. So to give some clues to our young colleagues especially, how can one differentiate myoclonus from tremor, phenomenologically, of course?
Myoclonus is usually distinguishable from other hyperkinesias, so from other hyperkinetic movement disorders, by its distinct clinical characteristics of rapid onset, short duration, and single event muscle activation. Careful characterization of the phenomenology helps differentiate myoclonus from other movement disorders, including essential tremor. Tremor is characterized by rhythmic oscillatory movements, while myoclonic jerks are usually arrhythmic. The clinical presentation are unfortunately not always classic. Electrophysiological investigation can be helpful in making a phenotypic diagnosis.
Thank you, Prof. And continuing on the differential diagnosis of tremor, how can we define and recognize dystonic tremor and tremor associated with dystonia phenomenologically? Can you give us some clues about that?
Yeah, very good question. Thank you very much. Two types of tremor in dystonia are typically classified. Dystonic tremor, which is defined as tremor in a body part affected by dystonia, and tremor associated with dystonia, defined as tremor in a body part not affected by dystonia. Dystonic tremor applies to the rather jerky oscillatory activity of the body part, particularly associated with abnormal posturing of that part, dystonic tremor proper. And when it appears in another body region, tremor associated with dystonia is labeled. Dystonic tremor, in addition, may be magnified by articular positions and tasks to the extent that a position-dependent and task-specific tremor can only be dystonic in nature. A head of or vocal tremor can be part of the essential tremor syndrome. Isolated head tremor is most often a phenotype of adult-onset cervical dystonia expressed as dystonic head tremor. The same can be said of isolated vocal tremor.
Okay, thank you. And speaking of dystonic tremor and tremor associated with dystonia, can you summarize for us the treatment options, please?
Treatment of dystonia could be applied for dystonic tremor, while anti-tremor medication that are commonly used in essential tremor would be suitable for tremor associated with dystonia. Benzodiazepines, including clonazepam, lorazepam, and diazepam, are often used. However, the therapeutic dose is often as one at which significant drowsiness or fatigue is observed. As a result, treatment with botulinum-toxim has become the first-line approach for some forms of dystonic tremor, such as cervical dystonia. The dystonic component of primary writing tremor may also respond to clonazepam and electromyography-guided botulinum-toxim injections. Dystonic tremor, as well as other symptoms of cervical dystonia, for instance, were shown to be responsive to pallidal DBS.
In the last couple of years, I've seen several patients who had a lot of profit from a deep brain stimulation as therapy for tremor. So which patients do you think qualify for this type of treatment if they have tremor? Is it an essential tremor type patient? Are these dystonic tremor patients? And which are your recommendations regarding deep brain stimulation and tremor treatment?
Thank you very much. This could be an easy or very difficult, actually it's a very difficult question. We know that over time, tremor may increase in severity and in the distribution of affected body parts. Several studies have reported that quality of life is significantly reduced in patients with essential tremor, and the medication that I mentioned sometimes is limited. Half of the patients of essential tremor do not respond to this medication, and these are perhaps the target population for the DBS. Some medication-related side effects often affect compliance, and in patients with disabling medication-resistant upper extremity tremor who have tried at least a beta adrenergic receptor antagonist and primidone without satisfactory resolution of tremor, neurosurgical intervention DBS should be considered if the patient does not suffer from dementia or significant comorbidities such as severe cardiac or pulmonary issues. Here, I would like just to highlight in one sentence that is another invasive therapeutic option, bilateral stages, MR-guided focus ultrasound, thalamotomy that is coming more and more in place and with good results in regarding the essential tremor.
In comparing deep brain stimulation as a method of therapy and high-focused ultrasound technique, which one do you prefer?
I think there are not yet comparing studies, and I think in the near future, more data would be available to rate one or another of the two very good options for such patients.
No, I just asked because I've seen both in patients on our ward, and I couldn't judge myself. Patients like it if they don't have this surgery type of treatment. But on the other hand, the high-focus ultrasound is also causing a lesion in the brain, so it's not that it's complete unlesional. Yildiz, do you have any more questions to our guest?
Well, Professor Pekurar, you covered all issues about tremor so far very well. Thank you so much, Professor Pekurar. It's been an inspiring talk already. I do not have any additional ones. What do you think?
Same from my side. Just want to thank you heartfully. I learned a lot, as I always do in these podcasts. I heard a lot from you about tremor, diagnosis of tremor, therapy of tremor. And it was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
Yes, thank you once again very much for the kind invitation, Professor Barbara Tettenborn and Professor Yildiz Degirmenci and EN staff Linde, Anya, Nadine from the EN podcast. Thank you very much for listening.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EAN Cast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.